the City, John Grayson, Rob Ross here with you once again, and glad to have you along with us as well. Rob, how's everything going in New York City?
It's fine. It's really cold, but nothing unbearable, I'm happy to report. There's no sign of snow. It's dry, sunny. It's just seasonably cold. And the great thing is that we're getting ready at my day job to wind down for the year as of next Friday. So time is moving along quickly, and I'm going to look forward to that vacation time.
Excellent. Yeah, it's good to know. And, you know, hereabouts, they're busy screwing up like they always do, because about a month ago, actually not even a month ago, there was a big snowstorm that they were not ready for. And they had no idea what was going to happen. And all of a sudden, people are sliding off the roads and careening into each other and all of this nonsense. So, because they hadn't salted, they hadn't done anything. So now we get word that tomorrow it's going to be cold and rainy. So what do? They go out and salt the roads for rain.
Well, is there a chance of it freezing?
Doubtful. And okay. Even if it did, what they do is they brine the streets first and wait for something to happen. So if it rains for a significant amount of time, if it rains for an hour, it's going to wash all the brine away anyway. So it doesn't really make any difference.
And meanwhile, I'm sure you've seen in the news that the Southeast was hit with a pretty bad snowstorm. Yep. A foot of snow in Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, into Georgia. I mean, they got hit pretty severely.
Right. And of course, while all of this is happening, what goes on in the Arctic? Well, there is no ice there. So, all of the old ice is gone out of the Arctic now because of that thing we don't believe in.
Climate change doesn't exist.
Right.
Fake news.
So, yeah, here we are. Another week's kicked off. And again, I hate to start the show this way, but we did, in fact, get more bad news. Because a member of a band that has been influential to so many people, yourself included, is now gone. What happened?
This one's going to be a little difficult. So I may ramble in places because it's still something I haven't completely absorbed, but Pete Shelley, the lead singer and main songwriter of the Buzzcocks, died last week of a heart attack at the age of 63 at his home in Estonia. And to say that the news was shocking is definitely understating it. I don't even really know where to begin, because the Buzzcocks have had a hold on me for 40 years.
Yeah.
From the first time that I ever heard What Do I Get and wound up buying it as a single, which I still have, at Sam Goody in the Woodbridge Mall, and I was all of 13 years old, it was 1978. They had this wonderful little box in the front of the store where they kept import albums, and that's where all the latest punk singles were kept. And I bought that single, and that single is in horrible condition because it's got the white grooves from having been played to death. But the Buzzcocks have been a part of my life for more than half of it now. And Pete Shelley's songwriting influence on me has been one of the key catalysts and components that really helped a 13, 14-year-old burgeoning songwriter take that trajectory that he needed. Shelley was part of that holy trinity. Him, Paul Weller, and John O'Neill of the Undertones. This was the loss of somebody who was incredibly important to me. Incredibly important in my formative musical years. I was sitting and thinking about it on the ferry ride home on Thursday when the news came down. And I realized that in whatever band I was in, however many years, I have never played a gig, done a set that didn't have a Buzzcock song in there.
Yeah.
Not at any time. And when they reunited in 1989, which was both a shock and an immense joy, I saw them, and it was one of those religious experience shows. It was as if they'd never been away. At that point, it had been 8 years since they'd initially split up. I'll never forget. The opening bands weren't very good nor interesting, and people were milling around. This was at the Ritz, and I just remember when the lights went down and the Buzzcocks came out without a word and just launched into, I don't know what to do with my life. All of a sudden, there was a surge where I felt myself compressed against bodies. My girlfriend, God rest her soul, who went to the show with me, disappeared underneath the crowd. She wound up having an asthma attack from it.
Wow.
But the set was more than everything you could have hoped for, because they tore through every song that we all knew backwards and forwards. And to hear that sea of people singing along, I don't even think the band expected that reaction. And you could feel a tremendous amount of love being sent both from the crowd to the stage and reciprocated back again. And here's the story that I'll tell. 1993, I was having a bit of turmoil in my relationship, and I was seeing someone on the side. And I know this is probably inappropriate, but it's all in context, and it ties together with what I'm trying to say. So I was seeing somebody else, and I went to see this woman and knocked on her door, and it was just a bad night from the moment she opened the door, suffice it to say that. I went home, and a few nights later on a Saturday, we were having a dinner party at my apartment, and I was still kind of fuming about this incident, and I excused myself and went into the bedroom, and I sat down, and I started to write these lyrics. It was really a connect the dots of what happened that night, and as I looked at the lyrics starting to form on the page, I could hear a Buzzcocks-style melody, the rhythm, the cadence. The use of language, it was pure Pete Shelley styled prose, nearly verbatim. So just to sweeten the pot a little bit, I started to put a few Buzzcocks in jokes in there. One of the lines is, the thorn on the rose pricks me once again. The thorn on the rose is on the label of side two of the vinyl of A Different Kind of Tension. And one of the lyrics is A Different Kind of Tension in My Head. So I wrote this song, which is called Tearing Me Apart, and was recorded finally years later by The Punchline. It's the first track off To Get to the Other Side. It is indeed done in the Buzzcocks style all the way through, production-wise, delivery-wise. In fact, the original first pass vocal that I did, the run through, this was the first time that we were in the studio together as a band again in years. I did it half jokingly and half, as I always like to call it, method acting, where I sang it in Pete Shelley's very campy kind of yelp. He had that certain sound in his voice that you always knew it was a Buzzcocks song.
Right.
And I did it exactly like that. But it was too funny for its own good, so I kind of lightened up a bit and sang it in my own voice, which is the recorded version you hear now.
Lying at your side, I wonder if I've done all I can do. I remain unmoved. All that any one man can give, I give to you.
Later, I met him after a Buzzcocks show, and I had my iPod, and I said to him, look, I would love for you to hear this. I think you'll get a kick out of it, if nothing else. And he listened to it with a lot of laughter. And after he took the headphones off, he said, well, that's really something special, isn't it? It's a good one, man. In that wonderful, you know, patented Mancunian accent. And I looked at him, I looked him dead in the eye, and I said, please don't sue me.
Yeah, right.
he goes, well, I can't afford to sue you anyway. So good one on me. And it was just, he was so complimentary and so kind and just a very warm individual. So I treasured that moment. And the fact that he's gone makes it incredibly difficult for me to listen to without getting very emotional. I haven't been able to listen to any of the Buzzcocks songs without being choked up by it. I mean, this was a band that carried me through the turbulence of, you know, those first years that you fall in love as a teenager, because all of their songs always dealt with the human condition and the misery of falling in love, with such songs as What Do I Get? To give the song its proper title, Ever Fallen in Love with Someone You Shouldn't Have Fallen in Love With, which was, of course, their biggest, most well-known song. You Say You Don't Love Me. You know, the list goes on and on, but he was also a master of turning the phrase when it was talking about the human condition in general. And I think the greatest statement that he made, and the Buzzcocks as a collective did, was, I believe, with that incredible list that in a lot of ways shadows John Lennon's old song, God, that whole list of, I don't believe in Dylan, I don't believe in Beatles. Life-changing stuff,
right?
And for a 14-year-old to absorb it, the only word that I could ever use concerning the Buzzcocks and concerning Pete Shelley's songwriting style was that it was special. He had that gift. He was a master of the pop-up, because the one beauty of the Buzzcocks with consistency is that it was poppy. It grabbed you immediately. They had a style that was patented as their own, whether it was something really hilarious like Orgasm Addict or Oh Shit, you know, you're beating your meat, you're getting a soul. That's great. I mean, that's such a fantastically pithy lyric. You're getting a heat, you're getting a soul, but you still keep on beating your meat to pulp because you're an orgasm addict. I mean, just brilliant. Or, Oh Shit, I Thought You and I Were Friends. Oh Shit, I Guess This Is Where All of It Ends. Oh Shit, I Thought Things Were Going Well, But It Hasn't Turned Out So Swell, Has It? Oh Shit, Oh Shit. I mean, come on. It was prime first wave era punk, but it was with a wink and a grin, and it was golden.
Yeah.
And certainly the Buzzcocks can be credited for, even though it wasn't their doing technically, releasing possibly the greatest, most flawless compilation album of all time, which became, in fact, their calling card album. It was a 1979 American release to introduce the United States to the Buzzcocks, because their first two albums, Another Music in a Different Kitchen and Love Bites, which could mean love sucks or morsels of love or, you know, the innuendo of physical love bites, neither of those albums were released in the United States. The newly minted IRS Records, which went through A&M and was run by Miles Copeland, brother of Stuart Copeland of the Police, was going to introduce the Buzzcocks to America with the maiden release on the label called Singles Going Steady, which was, to that point, all of their singles on the first side of the album and the flip sides of the singles on the second side of the album. That became their biggest selling album in their career. The English had to actually release it after the fact because it was in such demand.
Yeah.
There is anyone out there that doesn't own a copy of Singles Going Steady that does not worship and revere that album. It is impossible not to. It is one of the top 10 albums of anyone's lifetime. It goes up there with Revolver. It goes up there with Sellout. It goes up there with Sound Effects or Murmur or Number One Record. It's that vital, critical, and important of an album. It is a cornerstone record. And the man who wrote the predominant amount of those songs is now gone at 63. And I'm still trying to figure out, you know, how do you make sense of it? When you know perfectly well, we all go. And we all go at a certain point. When it's your time, it's your time. But, you know, you lose someone who's so important to you, and it's hard to absorb because suddenly he's gone, just like that. And, of course, you have to feel for his family. He leaves behind, I believe, a 20-year-old son and a wife and a brother and his bandmates, who are devastated beyond words, and a world that loved him, because Pete Shelley was, for all intents and purposes, absolutely loved, period. And I loved him, and it's hard to fathom, and it just once again hammers home that no matter how you slice it, especially because I'm 53 and he was 63, life is pretty ephemeral, and the span of time is just shrinking. And I don't mean to sound so maudlin, but that's the reality gut check. So, you know, for Pete Shelley, all I can say is thank you for giving me 40 years of unabashed joy. I am forever appreciative of it, and you will always be a part of me and in my heart, and I'm just devastated at the loss.
Well
like
said.
Everyone else.
Yeah, well said, definitely. And, you know, you brought up when you were talking about the opening acts when you went and saw them in 1989 and the fact that they were just kind of, you know, lame and nobody was paying much attention. The thing about the Buzzcocks was they came along at a time where there was a lot of that. There was a lot of just noise, you know, and noise and yelling. And it didn't make any sense. There was no cohesion to it in the punk world. And the bands that stood out were the ones who understood that you still have to make a hook. You still have to concentrate on the craft of songwriting. And, you know, he really got that. And that's, I mean, the reason why the Buzzcocks were what they were is because there was a melodic through line. I mean, they were complete songs. It wasn't just, let's get out and bitch about our dad while there's a drone guitar going. You know, there was so much more to it than that. And that's, I mean, the reason why they were one of the bands that filtered through, even though none of that stuff was really getting airplay much down in Florida, they were one of the ones who were the exception to the rule.
Well, the thing is, the Buzzcocks had a universal poppiness.
Yep.
You know, they had melody, they had hooks, and the lyrics. Here's the key thing. When Shelley founded the Buzzcocks with Howard Devoto, you know, having Devoto as the lead singer and the, for all intents and purposes, main lyricist, it had much more of that, dare I say, snarkier, a little bit more artistic bend to it.
Mm-hmm.
But once he automatically left the group after the Spiral Scratch EP and Shelley took over by default, he was able to put he injected himself into that band the right way. He made the Buzzcocks what the Buzzcocks really could have been, along with Steve Diggle, who can never be discounted as nothing less than an equally stellar songwriter.
Yep.
The great thing is that there was a balance between Pete Shelley and Steve Diggle and their songs, personified by one single would be Everybody's Happy Nowadays, and the next single was Diggle's Harmony in My Head, which is just one of the greatest moments of all time on vinyl, bar none.
Yeah.
But the thing is that Shelley's overall vision of the Buzzcocks was what gave it its longevity versus what it may have been if Howard Devoto had stayed in the band. The other thing is, because of Pete Shelley asking for a loan from his father, the Buzzcocks were the first truly independent band, releasing the Spiral Scratch EP in 1976 on their own New Hormones label. You know, that came out of pocket. They sat there gluing the sleeves together,
right,
and putting the records in one by one before anybody knew what indie was. They got it going. And by virtue of doing that, and by virtue of the shows that they wound up doing, United Artists signed them, ironically, the day that Mark Bolan and Elvis Presley had died. So there's all that to it. But, you know, the fact that the Buzzcocks were also not from the London punk scene where it was really ground zero. The Buzzcocks had brought the Sex Pistols to play in Manchester with the idea of being on the same bill, got themselves noticed, and off they all were. You know, they it was just off and running. And the Buzzcocks, thankfully, even though the rhythm section that we all know of, that was the classic lineup, if you will, of the Buzzcocks of Steve Garvey and John Maher, left in 1991 and 92, they've managed to parlay 40 years. You know, they had a fine rhythm section from 92 to about 2006, 2007. They got two new players in, but they did a great catalog of work after their reunion in 89. I mean, the Alive Tonight EP in 91 was just, Jesus, that was such a great, great four-song re-entry into the fray. I mean, I could ruminate on the Buzzcocks forever because I loved them so much. And yeah, like I said, they had such an influence on, and when you hear Tearing Me Apart, of course, which you will after this segment, and you will know, it's impossible not to love that sound. It's impossible not to find it appealing because it has that certain, it has that human warmth in it. It's guitars, it's bass, it's drums, it's verse, chorus, middle A, neat guitar solo, economic, you know, bridge, chorus, outro.
Yep.
And Shelley was a master of it.
Yeah. It's beautiful stuff. And, you know, we've got so much more to get into and so much more trouble to get into over the next couple. But yeah, definitely wanted to mark that sad goodbye. And the thing that has been overarching, I mean, for the last week, now week and a half almost, there's this radio station in Ohio, and they made national news because of a publicity stunt. They said, well, they first did the publicity stunt where they switched to all Christmas music, and every town now has at least two or three of these, and they all kind of wait to see which one of them's going to go first. And so this W whatever it is in Ohio switched over to all Christmas music, and then within a day or two of that, announced that they were pulling a song from their playlist, and the song is Baby It's Cold Outside, which has been done as a duet by I don't know how many different stars who have recorded and re-recorded this thing. And it's not that great a song to begin with, but they pulled it because they said of its sensitivity toward the Me Too movement, saying that the song Baby It's Cold Outside was way too rapey for them, and so they were yanking it off of their playlist. Really? I mean, is this what happens in the world now?
The answer to that is yes. I want to laugh at it, but the fact is, by doing a publicity stunt, they gave more cannon fodder to these lunatics.
Yep.
Because people are taking it seriously. Now, I saw a very good spoof called Baby Just Go Outside, where the lyrics were rewritten to, you know, I know no means no, so you gotta go. you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's all part of the whole thing that, you know, people are bitching and moaning in a not funny way about Run for Your Life.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Lennon, who of course has been canonized by the world, first of all, well, we all know what kind of guy he was when it came to women anyway.
Right.
But second of all, he himself said it was probably his least favorite Beatles song simply because it was lazy. No kidding. I personally think it's a great song because it's catchy and a really good way to end Rubber Soul.
Mm-hmm.
But the first line, I'd rather see you dead little girl than to be with another man. Well, first of all, that's a universal message. I mean, come on. Who are we kidding here?
Right.
Second, you know, just you don't keep your mouth shut and get in the kitchen. Second of all, we all know that the opening line comes from Baby Let's Play House, which of course we all know because Elvis's incredible version.
Right.
What? We're going to ban Elvis too now? Let's. Shall we? Go ahead. Fine. Whatever. I swear to God, John, I want to take those three songs, well, those two songs anyway, put them on an endless loop, both Maybe It's Cold Outside and Run for Your Life, and go to one of these Me Too protest bullshit things and just play it at maximum volume.
That's
just
right.
To drive them all back crazy. I want to trigger them to go running to their safe spaces.
Yeah, and that's the problem with
because
it.
Because this is ridiculous.
Right. And the thing is that the radio station does not care. And I think that's an important piece of this because we've called it a publicity stunt a couple of times now. They don't care. They did this to have happen exactly what has happened, which is they get their name mentioned over and over and over again, and the entire world is talking about them. So they win. But they just needed to pick something that was innocuous enough because, look, if it had been anything other than a publicity stunt, they wouldn't have said anything. They would have just stopped playing it. You know, if they don't want to play this, just pull it. But they did a big news release and all of this stuff. So they were trying for this. And as you so rightly put it, they gave fodder to people who think that it's real and are going, aha, we won one.
But John, at the same time, it goes even worse than that and further than that, because I'm sure you've seen in the last 2 to 3 weeks, people freaking out over good old Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer,
yes.
The Weinstein Bass special that we grew up with because, well, they're just really mean and they're bullying and blah, blah. First of all, these are fictional characters.
Right.
Second of all, any of you watch the actual program? It's an anti-bullying story because the Rangers were a bunch of little bastards to Rudolph. And let's face it, Herbie was kind of all by himself in the with the other elves, you know, because we all know dentist is a code word for something else, if you know what I'm saying. Now, as far as the Island of Misfit Toys go, you're going to tell me Charlie in the Box isn't a fucking serial killer? First of all, he's a clown.
Right, right, which
Charlie,
just shuts the book
right
there.
You know what's going to happen. He's a clown. And I'm sorry, you know the doll? You ever notice those little strands look like blood streaks coming down her face? She looks way too much like Carrie, okay?
Yeah.
So I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. People, if you're going to make a big stink about a cartoon show from 1964, you truly are a bunch of mental cases and pussies combined.
Right.
So fuck you.
Well, and you mentioned the doll. That was another piece of this controversy over Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. This is how stupid this got. That somebody pointed out, hey, wait a minute. This is the Island of Misfit Toys. That's why there's a Charlie in the Box. And, you know, some of the toys are missing pieces and all of that. The doll is just a doll. There's nothing wrong with the doll. So people started making up reasons why the doll was really there. You know, and
she's a ginger. She's a ginger. They're not human. They don't have souls. Okay?
Right.
Here, there's your answer.
Ginger's got
you.
Souls. Well, but that's the point, is that they went to one of the producers and said, is there anything to this shit about the doll having some kind of mental problem or something? And the guy was like, no. We needed another character. There was initially going to be a backstory for the doll, but we didn't have time to do it. But we still needed that character to move the story along, so we just left it in there and hoped nobody would notice. There's your answer. There's the big, bad conspiracy theory answer.
Well, you know, you've got the train with the square wheels. It tells me it's just North Korean, you know? I mean, no. Fuck. I mean, Jesus, what next? Are people going to get – I'm waiting, and you know it, and I know it. I'm just waiting for some dickhead out there to go after Charlie Brown Christmas because, of course, the Christian connotations underneath it.
Oh, no, no, they've already done it. Because, oh, yeah, well, not because of that. No, they went after the Charlie Brown Christmas because in the scene where all of the kids are dancing, Franklin is down in the corner off by himself.
Oh, God.
So now we've got racial insensitivity going on.
Guess what? Pigpen's by himself because he's a fucking slob. What is this? Insensitivity to slobs?
Right, yeah. So the whole thing is just so incredibly stupid. So, you know, we can't do anything without somebody whining about it. And, I mean, I think we've already given them too much time because, frankly, I don't give a damn for any of them. But, you know, you just every time you turn around, you hope that it's going to be the end of it. You hope that people are going to recognize that there was such a thing as another time and another place. And if you don't like it anymore, don't watch. Who cares? Go do something else.
Turn the knob off.
Right.
Or if you're too lazy, use your remote control and press the button.
But
change the channel. Watch what you usually watch. Watch 16 and Pregnant because, you know, it's okay to glorify teenage girls who get knocked up and give them a TV show. Right. That's fine. Yeah. It's empowering. Don't you know that?
Well, and we don't even need logic here. All we need is for people to recognize that, you know, you have these folks who are not just saying this is bad, I don't like it, therefore I'm gonna go watch something else, or go, you know, I don't know, jog, you know, do something. No, you know, it's what the message is I don't like this, Rob, so you can't watch it. Bullshit. You know, you don't get to do that. You don't get to tell me I can watch it or not.
The only reason I can say to you, John, you can't watch that would be the most obvious reason of all. When it comes to this Christmas stuff.
Uh-huh. Well, we're Jews.
Right. Yes. You know how this ends.
Right.
Badly.
There is that. So, yeah, everybody no just needs... done
the... Here we go. Hey, here you go. Conspiracy theory time. You ready?
Yeah.
Nobody's ever done a goddamn Hanukkah cartoon. Fuck all of you. Anti-Semites everywhere.
That's right. Where is it? But yeah, I don't know. Hang a lot of them. If there's something you don't like, you know, I don't like Maybe It's Cold Outside just because it's not my style, man. I mean, the song itself is just so, you know, so it's so slick and, you know, smarmy. Right.
Exactly. But you know what most of those fucking songs are? You know, if I have to hear, I told you, the one Christmas song I hate more than any is that fucking Andy Williams song, The Most Wonderful Time of the Year. No, it's The Most Atrocious Time of the Year.
Yeah, yeah.
I fucking hate that song. And frankly, I, as much as it's a wonderful delivery, I hate The Christmas Song by Nat King Cole.
I'm just over
it. I can't stand it because it's played to the... I actually, oh my God, get ready for this, even as a Jew, I like Joy to the World. And I don't mean Three Dog Night.
Yeah, I was going to say, Hoyt Axton, please.
No, that song's impardonable. Yeah, I know he wrote Never Been to Spain, and that's a classic. Okay, because Three Dog Night had some really good songs.
Oh, yeah.
But Joy to the World and Black and White are two songs that are verboten completely in my world. And if you try and play them, I will have you shot on sight. I like Good King Wenceslas for some stupid reason. The Christmas songs that are performed by the kids in the Charlie Brown Christmas, I love that so much.
Christmas Time Is Here and all that, yes.
Oh, I cry every time I hear Christmas Time Is Here, to be honest with you. I finally, after all these years, got the soundtrack album. I had to. I mean, how could I not?
Right.
You know?
And that was still all Vince Guaraldi, right? He wrote all of that stuff.
That was the first Charlie Brown special. That was all him. In fact, do you know, here's a little trivia note for you. Do you know what the actual title of the Charlie Brown theme is?
Maybe somewhere in the deep recesses, but I can't pull it out. What is it?
It is actually called Linus and Lucy.
Linus and Lucy, right, yeah, because somebody covered it.
Because it's a variation on Cast Your Fate to the Wind, right, which is exactly what everybody wanted him to kind of utilize as the background music to Charlie Brown. And let's face it, he knocked it out of the park with that.
Yeah. Yeah, about 20 years ago, one of those Fern Bar jazz guys redid Linus and Lucy and made a gazillion dollars with it. And it was lame. I mean, you compare it to the original, you know, with Vince playing, and all of a sudden it's, you know, just the original blows it out of the water. Taking something like that and trying to update it and putting it in 90s style production and
You're
have everything.
Cyrus Chestnut, are you?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Because when I was at Atlantic, we actually released an album by him, which was A Charlie Brown Christmas.
Okay. Yeah, but the original one is just so far superior.
That's, I'm sorry, but that along with Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the original soundtrack on Decca, those are two Christmas essentials. They really are.
David Benoit. Yeah. It was David Benoit.
Oh, okay.
And his balls. Or something. I never made that connection until just now. Anyway, yeah. But I mean, just enjoy yourself, man. I mean, enjoy Christmas. Just do what you do. And if you don't want to do what everybody else is doing, go do something else. But well, leave everybody alone.
We celebrate Christmas because, A, it's a centralized holiday. And like Thanksgiving, it's a holiday to gather with family and friends.
Right.
It's a day of warmth and enjoyment and, of course, good food, hopefully. And in this case, the annoyance of having to buy presents for people you really don't want to buy presents for, but you got to do it anyway. And then you got to smile and say, oh, thank you so much for the socks. Or just what I always needed, you know, a penis extender. You know, it's a fun holiday. It doesn't need to
Thanks,
be.
Thanks, Mom.
Really, Ma. The gift that keeps on giving. You're my therapy for a year, 12 sessions a month, you know. You know, the fact is, Christmas has been shit upon because it's a Christian-based holiday. You know what? It's a commercial holiday. It really is. And that's fine because everybody enjoys it. So people who want to knock Christmas, mind your own fucking business.
Right.
How about that? Here's a novel concept. Oh, and this goes across the board. Here's the arrow for everyone. It's not just Christmas. It's not just songs. Mind your own business. If nobody's hurting you and nobody's bothering you and nobody's talking to you about any of this stuff, keep your fucking mouth shut.
It is exactly as simple as that. And that goes for most things. It's not even just the Christmas thing. And if, you know, if Christmas really makes you feel bad because of the Christianity, just remember they ripped it off from the Druids like they did every other holiday. And it's fine. It's not even really theirs. So, you know, if you're really that pissed off at the Druids and the Germanic peoples of, you know, 10th century Europe, go take it up with them.
Yeah, really. Good. I want to see you go up against the Germans. That'll be fun. that's right. A grudge match, no matter how you slice it.
Lousy Huns. Anyway, and while that's going on, what else happens? Now the guy who they had tapped to host the Oscars, Kevin Hart, who, fine. I don't love Kevin Hart. I don't hate him. I find it difficult to gin up really any feelings at all about him. His comedy is okay. It's kind of the same a lot, but okay, sure. You know, he makes a lot of money doing what he's doing. God bless him. Let him go do what he does. But because he's a comedian, he writes funny things, and sometimes he writes edgy, funny things, and you can't do that now.
Yeah, well, you know, I was talking about this with my wife last night because we were watching a clip of the late, great Bernie Mac from the original Kings of Comedy special.
Yeah.
And God knows he was a funny, funny man. And he did this great, notorious bit about his sister's children and how fucked up they were.
Mm-hmm.
And how much he hated them. Even though he loved them, he hated them because, A, he didn't want to have these rotten little kids in the house that didn't listen anyway. But it was their psychotic personalities. And he was talking about his nephew in words that would upset many people.
Right.
As he referred to his nephew, he a homosexual. And then he started preparing to the kid. And I'm sure if Bernie were alive today, he'd be mauled.
Oh, yeah.
By the thirsty crowds for that routine.
But hang
because
on.
Because you can't tell an anecdote about a family member.
Right. But hang on a second. We okay. have let Eddie Murphy now do Klumps movies, you know, the Nutty Professor things and Dr. Doolittle and all of this stuff that's aimed at kids. And he's, you know, he's gone from being the filthy, edgy comedian from the 80s to being this guy who has almost become the heir apparent without the rape, I hope, you know, to what Bill Cosby was building. And I mean, this is a guy who on his very first comedy album and his very first nationwide comedy special had a bit called Funny Faggots. So let's take a little break here, shall we, and recognize the hypocrisy that's inherent in this entire thing. Why are we killing Kevin Hart?
Because you can't make jokes about trannies, apparently.
Yeah, but Funny Faggots is okay as long as you do Dr. Doolittle in between.
Not when I say fuck, start fucking.
And you know what? And that bit was hilarious. I don't care what anybody thinks of me for saying that. That bit was riotously funny.
Well, here's the thing. First of all, modern comedy is not funny. Maybe it's a generational thing.
It's safe.
It's safe. It's innocuous. It's just not funny. I don't understand modern comedy. I don't like modern comics. They don't speak to me. They don't. You know, there's. The last great comic to me was Dennis Miller. I think he was the last truly funny. I mean, Bernie Mac aside, he was because Bernie Mac told personal stories
right.
and gave personal opinions. Dennis Miller was more the heir apparent to the observational comedy of George Carlin. But Kevin Hart's getting, you know, they want his head on the platter for making a joke about trannies. So he graciously – quickly and quietly bowed out from the Golden Globes?
Oscars.
Oscars, even worse. So even more meaningless, okay? another show where you can pat yourself on the back for how wonderful you are.
Right.
Fuck you.
Right.
Fuck you, Hollywood. But the thing is, the ante was upped yesterday when some trans actor, actress, whatever the fuck you want to call them, because I don't even know how you're supposed to address them, and I'm not going to go into that. I'm not going into that fucking water.
All I can tell you, Rob, is no matter what you say, you're going to be wrong.
That's what's so right about me. I'm wrong.
Yeah, whichever word you pick, it's going to be the wrong one, and you're going to piss everybody off. So just go with it.
Well, right. That's what I'm here to do, because that's my job. Yep. I speak the truth.
Attaboy.
I am the John Lennon of podcasting. So anyway, this actor made some comment about Kevin Hart and blah, blah, blah. And D.L. Hughley just came out with guns blazing.
Good.
And that set off a shitstorm of people jumping on D.L. Hughley, basically saying he's a hypocrite also because he's going to defend Kevin Hart. But when it comes to murders of blacks and hate crime against blacks, and you know – no, you can't win. You just can't win.
Well, yeah, and it's...
Every social interest group has their vested interest in shooting their mouths off somehow.
Right. And what I don't understand is, with the Oscars themselves, and I'm not the first one to bring this up, but this is things that were on Twitter. Twitter's not hidden. When the Oscars decided they were going to go after Kevin Hart, did they bother to look over his Twitter feed to see if there was anything in there that they might not want? No. They didn't do their due diligence. So what happens? Some do-gooder has to start raising hell over it and screw everything up. But like you said, it's the Oscars, so I probably wasn't going to watch anyway.
Well, if you were, I'd laugh at you.
And I would deserve it.
I think too highly of you to think of you sitting there watching some, you know, sitting there at some fruity party, sipping like Dubonnet and watching fucking Oscar party. Like, oh, doesn't she look stunning in that gown?
Speaking of sipping wine, by the way, it was announced earlier today that as of next April, Kathy Lee Gifford is hanging it up. She's calling it quits. And I love that all of the headlines said she's leaving today. And I was like, start spreading the news. And nobody got it. It's like Kathy Gifford is leaving today.
First of all, that let me tell you something, that Chicky, you got to deliver it a little bit more smoothly, a little more progressively, you know. Start spreading the news.
That wacky news.
You know, it's like, I am white and you are black. I have sight, something that you lack. You know, that's how you deliver the shtick.
I don't know. I was trying to get myself to care about Kathy Lee Gifford, and I just couldn't.
I hate Kathy Lee Gifford from the days that she was on fucking, what's that, Name That Tune.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, when she was Kathy Johnson or something like that.
Whatever the fuck, she, Kathy Lee Epstein? That's a real
Is it really?
Yeah, but she's one of them born-again Christians, so good, they can have her.
Ah, gotcha. All right.
People like her and Jews for Jesus, they can all go drown together.
Yeah.
Do I give a shit about the Today Show? No. You know why? Because Katie Couric ain't on it no more.
Yep.
And Jane Pauley ain't on it no more. And that's the only reason I watched. You know why? Because they were newswomen. Yeah. And I love newswomen. You betcha.
And those were definitely two of the best. But at the same time, at least neither one of them is Gayle King. God, that woman.
You know, I got to give you credit where credit is due, my friend. Because for years I have beaten the drum about how alternately I want to, well, I can't say it, to do things to Mika Brzezinski, but at the same time, I couldn't stand her fucking school mom scold routine.
Yeah, yeah.
You have been just on fire with this Gayle King shit because you don't want to fuck Gayle King. You just want to punch her in the fucking mouth.
Oh, man. If she tells me one more time what I should find funny or not, yeah, we're going to have it out. I can't stand her. There is...
It's great. You should watch then Morning Joe because now you can actually watch Joe Scarborough with no testicles whatsoever.
Oh, yeah.
That fucking guy has cowered so much. He is... pussy personified.
Yeah, and Gayle King is just sanctimony oozing out of the TV, and it's just so insufferable. I can't stand her. She's the one that's Oprah's best friend, right? That everybody was saying, oh, they're probably sleeping together.
Best friend in quotation marks.
Right, yeah, okay, whatever.
Which is a nice way of saying special friend, because we can't say those things, you know, because
I don't care. Oprah
thinks she's going to run for president. Bah!
Yeah, right. Not for the same reason that the senator from New Jersey probably isn't. So, I don't know.
Oh my.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Oh, man.
I just caught that now. Wow, well played.
Thank you.
That was good.
Well, yeah, but those rumors have been out there about Cory Booker now for at least a couple of years. And that's, you know, every time they start getting close to, well, gee, maybe Cory Booker's the guy. Somebody goes, I think he's gay. And all of a sudden you start to see the open-minded Democrats run away from him like crazy.
Okay, let's call a spade here. I know that's not a racist commentary.
Boy, are you taking a chance.
Fuck that. Come at me, bro. Come on. Come at me, bro.
That's right.
That's all I have to say. Very simple. I would have voted for Cory Booker. Nay, I would have even campaigned for Cory Booker in a heartbeat until he aligned himself with Bernie Sanders.
Yep.
From that moment forward, he's dead to me. I'll be very frank. He was not good giving that keynote speech at the 2016 convention.
Right.
That was supposed to be – Don't laugh when I say his sort of coming out party.
I knew it was coming.
it's no different than when Obama made his first appearance and gave the keynote in 2004.
And killed
that
it.
That was his.
Right.
And he killed it. Cory Booker could not have been worse as a public speaker on a big stage. He couldn't do it. It was a bad performance. Okay, fine. You can refine it. You can learn and learn from your mistakes. But the moment he aligned himself with that piece of shit Bernie Sanders, you're dead to me.
Yep.
Anybody who's in the Bernie Sanders camp, I don't care if you've moved away. You aligned, you're dead to me. There's no coming back from that. You understand? You're dead to me. That's why I wouldn't vote for Cory Booker. If he really is a fancy man, well, then fine. I don't care about that. But because you're a Bernie Sanders guy, you're dead to me. Look, we've had a retarded president. George W. Bush.
You're right. Yeah.
We had a rapey president.
Bill Clinton.
We
Thomas Jefferson.
President that We had a president that fucked anything with a vagina and a pulse, and the pulse was optional until he got shot in the head.
Yep.
Namely Kennedy, of course, because you people don't know, go to school, so you don't know who's who. You had a president who had Alzheimer's. Well, we all know who I'm referring to there. We had a black president, Bill Clinton.
Yep.
I don't count Obama. Obama's half white people. Let's remember that. but we did have our first, we had our first Muslim president. That was Obama.
Oh, man. Send those cards and letters.
And of course, folks, we've actually had, as our current president, a walking penis.
Yes. Right.
A gigantic inflated penis with feet.
Yeah. Well,
so if we had a gay president, who gives a shit?
Right.
I just want somebody qualified. And this is one of the key things that drives me absolutely crazy when I hear or read people's commentaries on various places. People on the left, and this is strictly the left, because the right are going to run Trump again, and they're going to run him harder than they did before. That's a fact. But the left has absolutely no one of merit right now.
Right.
And all I keep hearing are the same names being thrown about, and I keep hearing the same phrases being tossed. We need somebody new, somebody fresh, somebody with persona, somebody with a clean background. First of all, this is politics. Are you that delusional? Are you on hallucinogenics? Get your head out of your ass. There is no such thing as a clean politician. It doesn't exist.
Right.
It's an oxymoron. And I'm not being facetious. I get really angry and uptight when I read this kind of stuff. Persona. Now, that's fine if you want a late-night talk show host. You know, I want somebody with charisma. David Lee Roth has charisma.
Yeah, you're going to make him president?
Charisma. Okay?
Right.
You cannot sit there and in all seriousness say, who is our Trudeau? Justin Trudeau is a fucking idiot.
Oh, he's a
in
dope.
Case nobody's noticed.
Right. Right. The only reason,
total fucking moron.
The only reason he's able to do anything right now is because he's a dope. And he what does he do? I mean, whenever he needs good publicity, he stands next to Donald Trump and waits for Trump to say something stupid so Trudeau can say, isn't he an idiot? And that's, you know, it's the only way that he can make himself look good. So he's kind of learned that game.
Plus, here's a newsflash, people. That's Canada. It is not America.
Right.
The focus is on finding somebody who can actually do the job, has the qualifications to do the job, go in and say, this is the plan. This is the agenda of how we start. Keyword, start to clean up an ungodly mess.
Yeah. You're right.
And someone to right the ship.
Right.
That's all there is to it. But no, everybody wants charisma. Fuck you. You don't belong in this country. In fact, you don't belong on the planet, period, because that's the kind of idiocy that's running the, you know, running with the, quote, Democratic pack right now, or the social Democrats, which is an aphorism for communists, because socialism in the way that Bernie Sanders and his cronies and, of course, that piece of shit, Ocasio-Cortez, who I'm so glad that people are finally sitting up, paying attention, and tearing her to pieces, finally calling her out for what she isn't. Those people are communists, and they're dangerous. Communism is dangerous. It's not paranoia.
Right.
It's not imagined. This is what our fathers and grandfathers were, in fact, fighting against. This is where this country needs to unite. People like them are anti-American.
Yeah.
They hate themselves and they hate America and they don't belong here.
And they don't
They're
understand.
They're the enemy.
Right. And they don't understand that when they sit there and they whine and scream about Donald Trump and the new right and the neo-Nazi movement and all of that stuff and the fact that they're all in bed together, what they miss is that the solution to that problem is not to go all the way in the other direction. You know, and you know, that's not what the choice is supposed to be. It's not supposed to be crazy far right versus crazy far left. It's supposed to be about whose ideas are better. But no, it's all about, okay, well, if you're going to go that far that way, I'm going to go that far the other way and just, you know, flip my middle finger up at you. It's just stupid.
Here's my capper on this whole thing. I don't know if you've seen it, but there's this article in Newsweek of how Kellyanne Conway said, Ocasio-Cortez is a 29-year-old congresswoman who has no idea what she's talking about, thus proving a broken clock is indeed right at least twice a day.
Right, but
and for once, I can honestly say, I am thoroughly in agreement with Kellyanne Conway.
Think about it, though. Is there anybody in this world who has a better idea what an incompetent politician looks like?
No, I mean, she's different. You know, anyway.
Right.
So I thought that was a fine way to top off the whole, because all we keep hearing is about the investigation. Here's a novel concept. Why don't we wait till it's actually done?
Sure.
Because every time we hear there's a smoking gun, you know, we're just not getting it. You know, the smoking gun has not appeared. Am I correct?
No, it hasn't. And what they're waiting for is they're waiting for him to go full on Humphrey Bogart in the Caine Mutiny. They're waiting for all the tweet storms and all the other crap to finally turn into him clicking the little steel balls together and going berserk on TV. And it's not going to happen. We've been over this ground before. It's not coming. That moment will not arrive. Might he be kicked out of office? Probably. But is there going to be that moment where he finally loses his shit? No, because he's a showman. And again,
don't think he's going to get kicked out of office. He's ridden it this far. You know, we're entering 2019. It's the last full year before campaign time again.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to happen.
Watch Pence.
I really don't.
The harbinger for all of this is Mike Pence. If you start to see real pressure put on Mike Pence to step aside, then you know that it's coming and it's inevitable. I was with you for a while on that, saying, you know, it's probably not going to go that way. And I still don't think it's going to happen this week. We're talking about something that's months and months down the road. But if you look at the way this is tracking, it's tracking almost exactly like late 1973. It's 45 years later, and it's going exactly in that direction. And what happened? What was the first big bombshell? Agnew resigned over something unrelated. And I think that...
Was it tax evasion, right?
Yeah, it was tax evasion with a trucking industry deal. So what they know they're going to have to do, if Pence is dirty, and there seem to now be indications that maybe that's what Michael Flynn was testifying about, all the redacted shit may have been about Pence rather than about Trump. So if Pence is in fact dirty in this whole thing, they need to move him out of the way, because you can't have Donald Trump and Mike Pence go down together if you're a Republican. If that happens, hello, President Nancy Pelosi. Okay.
God forbid.
Right. So
that woman is not who I would want as the first female president of the United States.
Right.
God forbid.
But that's the way it would go. So they've got to get Pence out. And if they start getting the inclination that Donald Trump is in real serious jeopardy of being indicted, being impeached, they will move to make Mike Pence go away and put somebody in there who's at least not criminal, so that they can move somebody up.
Fall guy. You think he's going to be the first real fall guy?
Yeah, because they've got to find a Jerry Ford to put in there, somebody who's not dirty that can save the world from having Nancy Pelosi take over the presidency.
Well, good luck, because I can't think of one Republican who isn't a total dickhead.
A total dickhead, maybe, but criminal, there's got to be at least one out there. And Corker? Remember, it can be anybody. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be a politician. You could, you could conceivably see, oh, geez.
I guess Corker, maybe, or who else? Who are some of the other... Oh, you know who we should get? Little Marco.
Yeah, right. Rubio could conceivably be it, and then he'd be the first gay president.
Oh, snap.
Yeah. Remember during the campaign when he started talking about going to those foam parties in South Beach?
Parties in South Beach usually equal white parties, or on the flip side, black parties. Kids, if you don't know what a white party or a black party is, ask your uncle with the funny mustache,
yeah,
who wears a little rouge every now and then. He'll tell you.
But yeah, if you see a guy walking around South Beach wearing Cuban heels going to a foam party, I got some news for you about that dude. Not that there's anything wrong with that. So given that, that's the only time I will ever do a Seinfeld reference. But
I'll just slide on that, because the phrase fits the tenor of the conversation.
Right.
I mean, if you've done this, you know, he's one of these, you know, it's, folks, you can't see it, but you know what it is because it's another Seinfeld reference. And I hate Seinfeld, by the way. That is a show I despise.
You know, I'm glad I'm not the only one. I never got it. I love Jerry's stand-up. I love comedians in cars getting coffee. I have no interest at all in Seinfeld.
It killed me because the people I worked with at Atlantic Records, as much as I love them, and most of them were indeed New Yorkers, would say stupid shit like, let's do something Seinfeld-like. Let's go to the soup Nazi. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you live here. That's like somebody in St. Louis going, let's go to the Arch.
You know what? You're dating me, so if you're going to go out, go get me some fucking soup and be quick about it.
There you go. So before we leave politics entirely, though, we got to take at least a little bit of a look at what's going on overseas, because this is the only time when American television pays attention to what's going on in Great Britain, because the Brexit vote was delayed and probably delayed indefinitely. Theresa May keeps quacking about how she's going to get it done. She's not going to get it done. And so the question now becomes, what happens with Brexit? The country voted to do this. And the European Union has already said, all right, we're okay if you cancel it and just stay where you are. But all that's going to do is piss off the people who voted for it. And we're going to have to go through this shit again a couple of years down the road.
She's in a lose-lose situation.
Yep.
Pure and simple. Pure and simple. She, you know something, and I'm no fan of the Brits, but if she'd stuck to her guns and carried it through and said, that, you know, this is what we're going to do. The people have spoken and voted for Brexit. Such and such a date that it goes into effect. End of story.
Right.
She would probably be in a lot stronger position. She would certainly be in a lot stronger position to win re-election. She is now kowtowed so badly and is pandering so poorly to everyone that it's transparent. And everyone can see through her. And any bargaining power that she had, anything at all, it's a moot point.
Yeah.
She's, and I have a feeling that Brexit will be delayed. I think it will be delayed until they get another government vote in it, because I don't think she's going to win re-election.
Right.
And contingent upon that, they will probably run another referendum and have them reverse the vote. Which I'm not, because I really don't understand the true magnitude of what Brexit is. I mean, to me, it looks like they should have done it. Get out of the EU, because all the EU is doing is sucking money from them.
Right.
You know, if that's the case, then I think Brexit's a fine idea. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I'm saying I'm looking at it from, you know, a layman's point of view on the other side of the ocean. And like I said, I don't really give a shit about what's going to happen in England, frankly. And that's not a knock on my English friends who I love dearly or our English fans. It's just that I don't know what the machinations are behind it, but the EU I've always found to be corrupt.
Yeah.
And England is not part of, you know, quote unquote, continental Europe. Therefore, why should you be paying these people to take money from you? I don't get it.
Yeah.
No, what does the EU do for England? Where is a benefit?
Yeah, it's cheap trade really is all it is. And it's cheap trade that they could just as easily negotiate it on a country by country basis. So England doesn't need it. The EU needs England way more than England needs the EU.
And the other thing is also England was very smart in not going to the euro, because
right,
the euro has been so detrimental and so erratic that look at Greece, look at Spain, look at Italy. For all intents and purposes, all three are bankrupt.
Yep.
You know? So, on paper, Brexit looks fine to me.
Yeah.
That looks like a reasonable, rational deal.
Well, and the thing is, when you talk about Greece and Spain and Italy, you're talking about three countries that have a decent GDP. So, I mean, you're not talking about some place that's out in the middle of a desert somewhere where they don't grow anything and they have no manufacturing. These are places that have incredible amounts of agriculture, incredible amounts of, you know, precious metals and oil and all this stuff you're supposed to have, and yet they still can't get it together? Why? Something is wrong there. Something is desperately wrong.
Well, that's their problem, and let them solve it. Now, but then again, France is also in the shitter, too.
Right.
And they allowed that to happen.
Exactly. So, exactly.
You know, You're responsible for yourselves, people. You're all adults. You're all your own governments. You know, you all know best, so therefore you should solve your problems on your own. You know, I'm sorry. This is the one place where I will say we as Americans should stay the hell out of their business. Let them fuck up. Don't bring it here. We have to fix our own problems.
Now, to take a total left turn at the traffic lights and go skidding off into some other topical material, I ask you, Rob Ross, a free safety in the National Football League. Who would you say is the model free safety in your time? Somebody who may still be playing, somebody who may not still be playing. But when you think free safety, whose name pops up?
I got to think about that for a minute. You just completely caught me.
There's a reason why I'm asking, because I mean, I think of guys like John Lynch, who played for Tampa. I think of guys like who was the one? Ronnie Lott was a fantastic safety. I mean, little compact guys who could fly and hit like a truck, and they weren't, you know, they weren't giants, because he can't be. You've got to be able to have that whole side of the field as your coverage area. So why do you suppose, with a game hanging in the balance, friggin' NFL genius, you know, Patriots coach, whatever the fuck his name is.
Belichick. You remember that from Cartman, for God's sake.
Yeah, why do you suppose it is that Bill Belichick would put a big, giant, lumbering oaf like Rob Gronkowski out at free safety on the final play of the game? What the hell was he thinking? Of course they were going to score a touchdown. They have a free safety who can't move.
Because Bill Belichick isn't as smart as he thinks he is.
Yeah.
And because all of his years of hubris between him and Tom Brady is now coming crashing down around them.
And I couldn't be happier. We got to play them twice in the next 3 weeks, by the way.
Listen, I despise the Dolphins, but hey, as of last Sunday, we are all Miami.
It was great. And the funny thing about it is, I think what the thinking was on Belichick's behalf, and I haven't really read anything about it, I just saw the play, is that he thought they were going to go Hail Mary. He thought they were just going to toss one up. So he figured, I'll put the biggest, tallest, you know, doofiest idiot out there that I can, so that he can punch the ball out of the air or intercept it or whatever. So he put Gronkowski out there, and instead of throwing the bomb, instead of throwing the Hail Mary, Miami went underneath, did the hook and lateral thing, and boom. I mean, all of a sudden, you got a bunch of guys who can't keep up with a receiver. Of course they're going to score.
So now let me ask you this. What happened with the Bills on Sunday?
No, geez, don't get me started. Don't even get me started. So now we've dropped two in a row, the first two divisional games we played since September. And we got Miami we lost to, and then the Jets we lost to this past week in a game that, again, Buffalo had right from the beginning, going up 14-3.
John?
Yes?
This was the flip of the game last week.
Right.
When the Jets played the Titans.
Yep.
Exactly the same, right down to, holy shit, they're going to win it in the last 3 minutes of the game.
Yep. And you could feel it coming. Right. Yeah, you could feel it coming. There was no way Buffalo was going to come out with a win in that game, even though it was at home. And it was, you know, it's embarrassing. But the thing that has dogged them, you know, they haven't had a quarterback in forever. There has not been a decent franchise style quarterback since Bledsoe was there. And even he wasn't that great in Buffalo. So that's been all of the focus, is we got to get a quarterback. Well, now they got a quarterback, and they have to deal with the fact that they still don't know how, when you're stepping on somebody's neck, how to keep your foot there. They always do, oh, gee, I'm sorry, did I hurt you? Let them up off the mat. And they screw this up again and again and again. So now it's about the system and about coaching, and can they turn it around and actually start winning games that are winnable games in the end?
Well, I'll tell you what, seeing Sam Darnold playing again was a heartening thing. He had a decent game.
Yeah.
A decent game. Wasn't a great game, but he certainly sparked to life in the second half, because, shock of all shocks, he threw for a touchdown in the second half of the game, which the Jets have not done all season.
Yep.
So, now, very quickly, I will just say this much. Rangers got the shit kicked out of them last night with Lundqvist in net by Tampa Bay. That was appalling. Because Lundqvist sucks, and that's all I'm going to say. And the fact that Ryan McDonagh scored made me love it, because they should have never traded him to Tampa Bay, and I hate Henrik Lundqvist. So There's my take on the Rangers. Fuck you, Rangers.
There you go. And meanwhile, right now the Kings are beating and the Kings are beating Buffalo 3-2 in the third, about 15 minutes left in that one. But yeah, the Sabres had won in that 10-game winning streak. I think 9 of the games were decided by one goal. So it's going to be like this a lot for the rest of the season.
Well, the fucked up thing with the Rangers is the fact that Saturday night they had a 3-0 lead. They lost the lead. It wound up going to a tie and then a shootout against the Panthers, and they actually won the fucking shootout, but it took to a shootout with the Panthers. And last night was just an atrocity. They were leading, by the way, in the second period 2-1, and suddenly that big dick just got shoved right in their face, that big dick being Lundqvist.
Now, so, and one last before we get
so
to...
So let's talk about the nuns in Las Vegas.
Yeah, I was going to say, right before we get to In Our Heads, we've got nuns embezzling. This has got to be a bizarre story.
Nuns embezzling from the school, and one of them retired already anyway. Nuns embezzled $500,000 from their school for their Las Vegas gambling trips. And the Archdiocese is not going to press charges against them. They're dealing with it internally through counseling. And now, I don't know about you, but I've read up enough about the law to know that if you embezzle, that's larceny. That's grand larceny, in fact.
Right.
Grand larceny in New York certainly has a statute. It starts between 3 to 10. Maybe, if not longer, depending on the size of the amount embezzled.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Well, and you can also, I mean, look, I can't be the only one who gets the willies every time I hear the Catholic Church say, we're just going to handle this internally. you know, I know some altar boys. So, yeah, that stuff really doesn't wash with me. But the thing is, here's where it runs into, again, a separation of church and state thing, because technically, the state doesn't need the church to press charges. If they have enough evidence, they can go forward without a complainant. So they could conceivably go and prosecute these nuns anyway. But they're not going to. Why? Because they're nuns. That's why. So if you and I had pulled this, even if our boss said, don't worry about it, we'll counsel them, everything would be okay, you and I would still end up in prison. Nuns, forget about it. Nobody's going to take that case. No prosecutor in his right mind is going to take that case.
Shit.
Yep.
Well, that now we can't embezzle what we were going to embezzle.
I know.
What were we going to embezzle anyway?
Yeah, yeah. I just don't look good in a habit. So, that well, doesn't...
That's some bad habit there.
That's I'm telling you, some bad hat, Harry. And with that, we're going to get to the In Our Head segment on the show, which you kicked off unwittingly earlier on when we were talking about lousy Christmas songs, because, you know, it is so much more difficult, I think, to come up with a list of good Christmas songs than it is to come up with a list of lousy Christmas songs. But let's get into some of them that are on the better end of the spectrum. That have come out of the music that you and I love and hold dear, because everybody and their brother has done a Christmas album and, or at least a Christmas single or something like that. What are the ones that you look forward to when it gets to this time of year?
My favorite is still Christmas Time Is Here Again, the most irritating thing that the Beatles could have done.
Yeah.
I would listen to Everywhere It's Christmas Pantomime, which was their 1966 Christmas thing, because it's not a song or collection of songs. It's them doing sketches recorded, and it's just bizarre and funny. So I enjoy that. My favorite Christmas song might be the Razzleberry Dressing song from Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol. that may be it. Obviously, the Charlie Brown Christmas soundtrack. Yep. I mean, Christmas Time Is Here, genuinely, truly, always puts tears of joy in my eyes. I love that. It makes me feel warm because that is such a part of me. From it came on the air when I was a baby, for God's sakes. So that's been part of me for 53 years. So I genuinely love that. As cynical as the song is, I kind of like Thanks for Christmas by the Three Wise Men, who is, of course, XTC and their Christmas guys. Just before they released the Dukes of Stratosphere, they're psychedelic guys. But it's a nice song. It's a good song. I do like, even though it's not an intentional Christmas song, Jesus Christ by Big Star. I really like the Monkees version, which, if you haven't heard it, was just released on the Monkees' first Christmas album, believe it or not. It's a good take because, one, Mickey's voice is just right for it. Even at this point in history, Mickey can still belt it out.
Oh, he sounds great, and yeah.
Two, it feels more like a Christmas song than the way Alex Chilton had intended it, you know? So it works, and it works really, really well. The song that I hate more than any Christmas song, Most Wonderful Time of the Year aside, you know which one it is. Wonderful Christmas Time by Paul McCartney.
Oh, yeah. That's...
I love Paulie to death, but I will never forgive that.
I hate
that piece of shit more than I hate Happy Christmas War is Over, because that's just a faggy song.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. John lost it there. John showed that he was full of shit with writing that piece of garbage. And you ever hear Ding Dong by George Harrison?
No.
Good.
Okay. Don't. All right. We'll just leave it at that. Yeah. So definitely the solo Beatles, not the best when it came to writing Christmas songs.
But of course, the one Christmas song that we all can agree upon, the Chipmunk song.
Oh, yeah. Right. Me, I Want a Hula Hoop. But you see, with me, it begins and ends with Father Christmas by the Kinks.
Don't give my brother a Steve Austin outfit. Don't give my sister a cuddly toy. We don't want a Jinx or a Monopoly.
Anytime you're talking about people getting robbed and beaten silly and going after Santa Claus and knocking him over and knocking over his reindeer and taking all of his toys, that's a Christmas song. Okay, that's something I can really get behind. Not to mention the fact that I'm a huge Kinks fan anyway. But there are a couple of other ones out there, and I may be the only living human being who really, even though I hate the song, Little Drummer Boy, I love the Bing Crosby-David Bowie crossover. I can't help it. It's just great. And everybody else hates it, including Bing Crosby and, when he was alive, David Bowie. So I don't know what to tell you. I just love listening to that.
A lot of people actually like it. I just found it kind of weird.
Yeah.
There was a very fun and odd spoof of it that was on the original Daily Show with who was the original host? The smarmy blonde guy?
Oh, yeah.
He's a skin jerk.
Right. The guy who used to be a sports guy.
Right.
Yeah, I don't remember his name, but yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Well,
Craig Kilborn. A version of,
right. Craig Kilborn and Bob Mould did it. Because, you know, Bob Mould actually did the theme from The Daily Show.
Right.
Yeah, I I love Bob, but he should have been royally sued for that, because there is a song by The Chords from 1979. The song is called It's No Use. Do I really need to say more than that?
No. Yeah, it's a little more than close. But, and I, you know, I still like, even though it's not really a song necessarily, but I loved Cheech and Chong's spoken word stuff. And Santa Claus and His Old Lady makes me laugh like a little kid every time I hear it. Every Christmas, I got to listen to Santa Claus and His Old Lady at least once.
Yeah, I'll even give Elvis doing Blue Christmas kind of a pass, because it's Elvis.
Run, Rudolph, Chuck Berry.
I actually prefer the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer soundtrack/TV version of Holly Jolly Christmas, because it's a lot more upbeat. And even though Burl Ives was a piece of shit, what the hell? He's a folk singer. I don't trust folk singers.
And everybody always goes with Bruce Springsteen doing Santa Claus is Coming to Town. But every time I think about Bruce Springsteen and Christmas, I go through his version of Merry Christmas, Baby, back to Otis Redding.
Merry Christmas, Baby. Should it treat me nice? Merry Christmas, baby. Should it treat me nice? You bought me a diamond ring for Christmas. I feel like I'm in paradise.
See, I am not a fan of contemporary artists doing Christmas songs when they spice it up or rock it up or soul it up, you know?
Yeah.
It just kind of loses the whole Christmassiness of it, you know? I love anything that comes off of Stax, but I don't want to hear the Memphis horns pounding away at, a classic Christmas piece. It just, it doesn't feel right. You want to get into the Christmas feel. Ironic that I'm saying this, of course.
Yeah, Marini
is not lost on you, my friend.
No. There's only so many times you can sing dreidel, dreidel, dreidel.
Exactly. I'm just a Jew at Christmas. it's funny. I do regret the fact that the Punchline never recorded the Christmas song that I wrote. It was a great song. We loved it. It was. We laughed our asses off every time we did it. It was called Christmas Presents, Presenc, as in like Zeppelin Presents.
Right.
Because at the end, it ended, I think, on a D chord, and we superimposed Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and Jingle Bells over it. Like, one would play the riff of one, and one would play the riff of the other. Oh, Stiff Little Fingers did a really good version of White Christmas. That was a good one. It was part of their silly encores with Running Bear.
And, but you know, next time we get together, we are going to do the worst ones. So that'll be our last pre-Christmas show. So we'll
like a laundry list.
Yeah, oh, I know. So that'll be the easy task. But the one that I will leave you with, as ridiculous as it is, and it is, still, I can't help enjoying the charm of it and enjoying the fact that when I was a kid, my dad, it was the first sort of reality program, even though that term really didn't exist at that point, when they used to do cooking shows, Dad would watch religiously Justin Wilson, the cooking Cajun. Loved that guy. And that was all a put on. That's an act. You know, that guy, I think Justin Wilson was like an insurance salesman or something. And he would have to go do these seminars, and he invented that Cajun character so that he would, you know, do the seminars.
I guarantee.
Right, exactly. So that character was built by him to do something else. And then when he started the cooking show, he just figured, it'll be my hook. I'll do it as that guy. And it worked, and it worked like crazy. So to the point that they did a version of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer that he sang with a Dixieland jazz band behind him, and it's Randolph the Rouge-Nosed Reindeer, because he's Cajun, you know, he speaks French, and it's, you know, it's campy and silly and ridiculous, and I can't not smile when I'm listening to it.
And see, that's what makes it worth its while. Right. Was, you know, if you're genuinely going to feel something good about one of these songs, then it will. I mean, yeah, it's Christmas. We make fun of it. Sure. But look, like I said before, the minute I hear Christmas Time Is Here by the Charlie Brown Kids, I feel good.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what matters, because that's the power of the song. That's the emotion. It's a time and a place, and it's just, you can't put a price on it or a proper description. You just got to feel it.
Well, Rob Ross, feel it we will, and we'll get together again next week. And as we said, we'll end up with the worst Christmas songs on our lists, our naughty list, if you will. And we'll have a whole bunch more stuff to talk about at that point. And who knows, I may even have a job by then. Rob Ross, have a great week, and we'll talk to you again next time.
You too, brother, from your mouth to God's ears about the job. And yeah, it's our run-up to Christmas. It's our pre-Christmas extravaganza. So we will see you all then, folks.
You know, dasher and danser and prancer and vixen, Comet and Cupid and donner and blitzen, huh? But do you recall the very most famous reindeers of them all, huh? Randolph the Rouge-Nosed Reindeer. Now he had a very, very shiny, shiny nose, yeah. And if you ever see that, I'll guarantee you'll guarantee it glow. All of them other reindeer, they used to laugh and call him all kind of funny names. They never let poor little Randolph join in all them reindeer games, no. In one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa brought himself down and he said, Randolph, will you know it's so bright? Won't you guide my sleigh tonight, huh? But then how the reindeers love him, and they all shout out with glee, oh boy, Randolph the Rouge-Nosed Reindeer, you'll go down in his story. Christmas Eve, Santa brought himself down and he said, Randolph, with your nose so bright, won't you guide my sleigh tonight? And in how them reindeers love him, and they all shout out with glee, whoo boy, Randolph the Rouge-Nosed Reindeer, you'll go down in his story.